Oscar Micheaux was one of the first African-American directors in cinema, and he wrote and directed more than 40 movies in the early part of the 20th century. He became a pioneer of indie films. One of those films now has a fresh look and sound. Micheaux directed the silent film Within Our Gates in 1920. Composer, musician, and Georgia native Wycliffe Gordon has created a new score for that film. The Savannah Music Festival will screen it with a 19-piece orchestra next Friday night. So with us now from our GPB Augusta studio is Wycliffe Gordon. Hi, Wycliffe.
Hi.
It's good to have you with us. Also with us is Camila Martin. She teaches African-American literature at Savannah State University. Good morning, Camila.
Good morning.
Camila, give us an introduction to Micheaux and his work.
Okay. So Micheaux is... obviously one of the earliest filmmakers, independent black filmmakers, the pioneer of race films.
Wait, what's a race film?
Okay, so a race film is basically a film directed, produced by a black director with an all-black cast and made specifically for black audiences. And so he is the first black race film director, producer of the early 20th century. He comes 1920s, he's producing films. He's really conscious of social and cultural tensions in the United States at the time, particularly concerning African Americans, and so he brings a lot of that to his films as well. So he's really interesting and important for that reason. And he has a long legacy of providing film and insights and stories to the black community well before it was popular to do so.
Yeah, I was really surprised that any African Americans were making films at that time, and he made so many of them. Were they widely viewed?
That's interesting. I think that he had some issues with getting certain films viewed in certain states because of censors and that sort of thing. He did a lot of racy things for the time period, depicting, black lynchings on film, interracial relations, rape even on scene. And so they were seen. Widely might be a little bit of a stretch.
So Wycliffe, that brings us to you in trying to bring these films that were so much of a time to a modern audience. How do you approach that from a musical standpoint?
Well, I got a chance to watch the film several times and decided that I would make my content relative to the activities that were taking place. The first film I did was Body and Soul from 1925, and it dealt with a preacher, someone that was posing as a preacher anyway, and he was an ex-convict. And one of the issues I've always had for quite some time was playing jazz and then church music side by side. But the content of this film called for those scenes, so we got a chance to make music in that way. And even with Within Our Gates, it deals with some of the issues that we have in the African-American community or our community as Americans or people at large. And just I thought that Body and Soul was something which was Paul Robeson's debut as an actor on film from 1925. But then when I heard about Within Our Gates being Micheaux's answer to D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation. And when I saw the film, I was really, I was flabbergasted, actually, just to see the content that he addressed and dealt with at that time. So I wanted to write music that would capture the essence and tie the themes into, the thematic ideas into the content of the film. And even though they show a lynching, you don't actually see that. It was just really implied.
Let me interrupt you for just a second so we can actually listen to some of the music. This is actually relative to what you were just saying. This is a chorale, something that you composed for Within Our Gates. This is A Life is Given. Camila, looking back at this film that was made nearly 100 years ago, what do we take from it now? Just is this just kind of a slice, an artifact?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that there are still some real deep-seated racial tensions in the United States. And so even viewing this film and understanding that the context, the cultural context in terms of the time period is different, I think there are still some very real issues that America still has not addressed.
What, you're kidding me? We haven't solved all our race problems?
Of course not.
That shocks me. So, Wycliffe, let's take a listen to a little bit more music. This is The Search. Again, this is part of Wycliffe Gordon's music for the silent film Within Our Gates. Wycliffe, did I just hear your voice singing on that track?
Ah, yes. Well, you heard the voice of the whole orchestra singing, and of course I'm singing as well.
So, Wycliffe, what makes it different in a composition that you're writing for a silent film? What is that particular challenge?
Well, the challenge is to capture the essence of what goes on in the film. For me, when I've seen silent movies where it's the music is played by a solo piano or organ, sometimes the music is just, it goes on, and this is a 78-minute film. So the theme that you played first, Life is Given, the second part of that title is Life is Taken Away. So that theme plays throughout the film to kind of tie the events as I saw them, together.
Camila, looking back at Michaud's work, have we lost some of the films? Do we have everything?
We do not. As a matter of fact, we probably have lost a majority of the films. You know, he was an independent filmmaker, so he didn't have the backing of the large, you know, Paramount or Columbia, the studios. And so, you know, the ability to then preserve those films were simply, you know, kind of lost in the ether. And so while there are some that have been maintained, such as Within Our Gates, there are so many more that have been lost. You know, in fact, one of the films I'm very interested in is his adaptation of Charles Chestnut's collection of short stories, The Conjure Woman, which he adapted in 1926. And that film is assumed to be lost.
Why are you interested in that one?
It connects to my own personal research. I'm interested in depictions of African spirituality and folklore, and I'm very interested in how that's depicted on film. And so that being one of the earliest films to depict such representations, I'm very interested in being able to find a copy that I could actually view and critique myself.
If his films were, you said they weren't widely viewed, how did he then finance more than 40 films?
You know, this is interesting, and I'm actually quite impressed by this. And, you know, the research varies, but as the story goes, you know, he worked a lot of odd jobs in his younger years, spent some time as a, railroad, porter.
Oh, a porter, yeah.
Yes. And he saved his money, and then with his connections, he did a lot of networking on the train, meeting, you know, wealthy white men and making connections. And then when he had about $1,000 that he had saved over this time period. And so then he created his own book and film industry, and he sold shares. He connected to those wealthy white patrons and sold shares for about $75 to $100. And
that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. And so that is how he financed his films.
And do we have any idea how those investors did? Did they make money? I mean, what happened at the end of his career when he was dissolving that company?
That's a mystery for me. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's listen to a little bit more music. This is Sneaking Solos. And again, this is music written by Wycliffe Gordon for the silent film Within Our Gates. ¶¶ what do we know about these silent films? In other words, for the films that we still have, mm-hmm. what has been preserved? Anything of the original scripts? Do we know who wrote what, who did what, or is that basically all lost to history?
Well, I know that the Library of Congress does have a collection. What is left of his legacy, I do believe, is owned by the Library of Congress. I know even within our gates, there is one missing reel, or there's one frame.
Yeah, that's what Wycliffe just said. We only have 8 of 9.
Right. So even in its as preserved as it is, it's still not fully intact. But I do believe that whatever artifacts that we have, and I'm not sure about scripts and that sort of thing, but I do know there are maybe a dozen maybe films that have been preserved, and I know that the Library of Congress has kind of taken that on and been able to preserve, you know, what does exist. And there may be others out there.
But what does this tell you? I mean, you teach literature.
I do.
So you go back to this and you look at it as, you said, not an artifact, but how do you see this?
I see the films as text. They tell a story. There's a narrative.
Because they're silent film.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, there are moving images. And so I think that's important to kind of look at the image and critique and analyze the image that the images that are presented, particularly when we're thinking about the early 20th century race relations. Some of the critique that Michaud gets is that he also, as much as he critiqued intra-racial tensions and colorism, a lot of the actors and actresses in his films are lighter skinned and you know, kind of fall into that more privileged class of you know, African Americans that, for whatever reason, were more privileged because they had lighter skin. So that's a critique that we can bring to his artistry, to his creativity here in the 21st century, and I think that's important. And it also lends itself to the larger narrative of African-American culture and history.
Was he the only one? We have about a minute left, but was Michaud, I mean, I was surprised that he even exists. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Are there others African-American filmmakers from that time?
Not that I'm aware of.
He was really alone.
He was really alone. He was really a trailblazer, a pioneer. He died in 51. But even at that point, you didn't see a lot of African, even in 51, you didn't see a lot of African-American film producers, directors who were doing the type of work and producing as much work as he was producing.
And we tend to think as of all these issues that you're talking about in mm-hmm. terms of race and those other things really becoming a national conversation in the late 50s and
right.
60s.
Right, absolutely.
So he was a trailblazer in a lot of ways.
Right, absolutely. And it's interesting because on his gravestone, he's buried in Great Bend, Kansas, where his family is buried. His gravestone says a man before his time. And I think that speaks volumes to his presence and his importance in our society.